All right, I'm going to talk about some of the unintended community consequences to the Ebola contact monitoring that we faced in Central Texas. And to provide a little bit of perspective, I cover a 30-county region in Central Texas. Texas is a huge state, both geographically and population-wise. From where all the major activity was happening up in Dallas, from about the middle of my region is about 130 miles. It'll take 2 to 2.5 hours to drive there, longer if you go during any peak traffic hours for any of our areas. We're pretty distinct from the Dallas-Fort Worth area in northern Texas. Our major metropolitan area is the city of Austin, which happens to be the state capital. Some of the northern parts of my region do listen to Dallas news, but most of my region listen to news out of the Austin area, and some of the southern areas will listen to news out of the Houston area. Texas has 254 counties. They divide it up for counties that can have a local health department. They'll provide direct services. Counties that do not have a local health department, the state offers local health services. So out of my 30 counties, 7 counties have a local health department, and those happen to be the ones with the larger metropolitan cities. My office directly covers 23 of our counties. So you've seen the Ebola timeline several times now. The key dates for my area in Central Texas, though, tended to revolve around when things hit the media. So when it became common knowledge that there was a case in Texas, we actually found out about that from the media before we found out about it through official channels, which really shortened our ability to respond to calls, because within 10 minutes of media news alerts, we started receiving calls wanting to know if they were true. And so some of my staff were stalling while they're talking so that we could find out whether or not those are really confirmed news reports or are we seeing things that weren't quite right. And that was a really important process throughout our entire response, keeping track of what was confirmed in real information and what was just wild rumors with no basis in foundation. One of the other key dates for us was the day that we received the contact list for the passengers that had been on the plane with the healthcare worker that traveled from Texas to Ohio and back and then was diagnosed with Ebola. We received that contact list before we received guidance on what type of follow-up we were supposed to do with everyone that was on that plane. And the next key time frame for us was about the same time as we knew that we were going to be tracking down passengers from the plane. It became common knowledge that there was two children, school age, in our region that had been on that plane, and very shortly thereafter, the school district closed. That created a chain reaction throughout our entire region. Of course, then we get a second plane list for the second flight. There was a cruise ship incident where a healthcare worker that had been working in the hospital went on a cruise before there were travel restrictions in place. And as you saw from the earlier presentation, those changed. That cruise worker was asked to not be in public places while on a cruise ship. And that had a whole round of repercussions for my 30 county area. When we started receiving the official notifications of monitoring people traveling to West Africa, which our first one didn't start until the end of October. So we were pretty busy in October. But we felt a little prepared for what was going on. We found that we had already done a lot of work with patients under investigation. While only one person met the criteria for patient under investigation out of my 30-count area, it's only one person was tested for Ebola. We had been responding to calls for testing since, I think that the first one came in for us around August, and I believe the first one coming in for our state was actually around July. So we were getting pretty good at providing some geography lessons and working through what really was a patient under investigation. And we learned a lot from this. And some of this we built upon experiences that we had from the 2009 pandemic in Texas. One, we knew there was going to be a much higher desire for testing than testing was actually needed. So we had a pretty good system in place to start ruling out tests at the local health department level, and if somebody just was not happy with the local health department, the regional health department would give the same answer, and the state health department would give the same answer. And for this response, we were really lucky because the CDC was also giving the same answer. So when they were told no at one level, they were told no at almost every level. We also knew that there was going to be some challenges for many of our hospitals and small clinics, that the time between when Ebola was suspected and when we could confirm or rule out Ebola could be a fairly substantial amount of time. If we were lucky, we might be able to do it all in one day if you happen to be near our lab. However, not all of our counties have a lab in their area, and some it's a fairly long distance. And if you look at other parts of Texas, it could be an 8-hour drive to get to a laboratory that could do Ebola confirmation. So we knew they're going to have to potentially isolate somebody for up to 3 days before they will know whether or not this person truly is an Ebola case. One of our other experiences with our actual PY that we had was that routine testing was severely delayed. It took 3 days just to do a blood cell count on a patient that we ended up ruling out for Ebola. That's a long time for a very basic test. So we felt pretty good. We'd already had some experiences. We knew some of the challenges we were going to face. And then we got that passenger list. Only 8 out of the 165 plane contacts were in our 30-county area. One person happened to be on both sets of flights, which was interesting trying to figure out all the time frames for monitoring because of that. It had 6 adults and 2 school-aged children, and those school-aged children were the ones that really resulted in some of the challenges we saw in the community. However, we knew there were some things that were going to happen. First of all, we called together all of our local health departments, so our 7 local health departments, and we had a conference call the day we got the list before we had the full guidance. We knew guidance was going to change. We knew that the guidance that we had, that we were hearing was coming, may or may not look like the official guidance. So we said that up front to our local health departments. We expected guidance to change. We needed them to bear with us. This was an emerging situation. But we also needed to decide what were we going to do in our 30-county area so that we could be as consistent as possible but flexible enough to adapt to changing guidance. We also knew that this wasn't going to be just an epidemiology response. So we made sure on that conference call, we not only had our surveillance partners who were going to be doing the actual monitoring, we brought in some of our public health nurses, we brought in some of our social workers, and we reached out to our zoonosis control group. So we wanted to have a diverse group brainstorming how were we going to respond. One, we knew that health department workload was going to be impacted. We were just going to figure out how to make it happen. We knew, based on our PUI experiences, that we were going to have to do some heavy coordination with emergency medical services and our medical system partners, that we were going to have to make sure they understood and trusted the messages we gave. One of our big fears, this was in October. Our flu season was starting. What were we going to do when one of those passengers from the plane got influenza while we were considering them for Ebola? This really stuck out. We had this huge discussion. Do we vaccinate them for flu when we see them the first time? We ended up deciding, no, we did not want them to have a fever related to that vaccine, which may make us have to put them in the hospital isolated for no real medical reason. However, we did end up offering flu vaccine to several of their household contacts. We also knew there'd be a lot of fear and uncertainty in the passengers and their family, and so we talked about ways that we could talk to them. We were concerned that they would be socially and emotionally vulnerable. So we built in a pre-screening questionnaire where we could talk to them and make sure they had resources if they started feeling overly upset or concerned about what was going on. We also had a little bit of concern, what if they were going to be not going to be compliant or not? However, some of the things that we did not consider during those calls, again, we felt pretty good. Not many people were talking about, do we vaccinate for influenza for these folks at this time. So we were, while we felt really prepared, we realized afterwards, we weren't nearly as prepared as we should have been. Hindsight is always much better. Some of our surprises, well, I mentioned before, there were 2 school-aged children. That school closed for several days for very intensive cleaning. As soon as it became public knowledge that there was a family in one of our counties that was being monitored for Ebola, not only did the school close, the city trash services, the trash collection, was trying to pinpoint the neighborhood because they wanted to stop trash service to the entire neighborhood. Work woes. This is one of the other challenges that we had. Not only were we had no travel restrictions for some of these folks, their work would just not flat out allow them to come. For some people, the spouses of the passengers were not allowed to go to work. The children of some of the passengers were asked not to go to school. And again, the schools, that was the really big one for us. When that first school closed, I started getting calls from school districts across my 30-county area. They have some vague connection with a staff member or family to that school. Do they need to close as well? Schools refused to admit children that were from Africa, regardless of what part of Africa they were in. And the response from the public was extremely visceral. There were death threats made towards some of the health department staff that were doing the monitoring of those passengers. There were death threats made against the county judge for supporting the local health department there. So that was all pretty busy. Then we got into the monitoring. The worst has to be over. In our area, we ended up monitoring about 92 of the passengers. We thought we were prepared. We built a better checklist, what we're going to ask everybody, who we're going to tell, how are we going to reach out. Well, we still had several unanticipated consequences. We started getting the healthcare workers who stopped providing healthcare work and when do they transition? Do we transition somebody from some risk to low risk and when? We ended up doing that so people could have things like Easter with their family. 21 days of everything but Ebola. This is what we had been worried about when we were thinking about flu. We didn't necessarily think about the person that was treating themselves with antipyretics, the person that had really bad allergies, so always had a sore throat, always felt crummy, the person that went to the ER with severe abdominal pain, turned out to be a kidney stone, diagnosed within 30 minutes, but it took hours for us to get the hospital to agree to even see the person. Nor the person that died on their front doorstep covered in vomit, who was being monitored, turned out to be a synthetic marijuana overdose. That created quite a storm when it found out that was somebody being monitored for Ebola. The plans that were in place by our hospitals were not necessarily operational plans. Our kidney stone patient showed up at the hospital. He had agreed that he wanted to go to the hospital, knew that he was coming. They didn't tell us that their plan was when this person shows up, they were immediately going to transport him to another hospital. Part of the reason they wouldn't see him is they found out that their plan to transport to their main medical system hospital was, even though it was written, they weren't really ready to receive somebody. So then they didn't know what to do with them. And finally, they did see him, and it was really nice. When they saw him right away, they're like, oh, this is not Ebola, which we've been telling them. No symptoms except for severe abdominal pain. And they diagnosed him with kidney stone and sent him home. The other big debate in Texas has been personal privacy versus protecting first responders. Do you share the home address with law enforcement, with EMS, with the fire department? And this has gone back and forth, and depending on who you ask, you'll get a different answer. I feel differently if this was a high-risk person, but the low-risk folks that had no travel restrictions, my office felt really strongly there was no reason to share that address, which some of our first responders felt very differently about. They didn't want to show up, and they told me, if we get a call from the house, some said they were not going, some said it would take them an hour to respond. And my response was, what if this person has a heart attack or there's a home invasion? So we went round and round, and we came up with an agreement where we gave them a code word that if they called 911, they'd use the code word, and that would flag for first responders to check with the health department before they go in. So what did we learn from all of this? Basic disease transmission principles really are not basic for the general public or even for some of our medical partners. And really, we don't want to underestimate the fear, especially that visceral fear. And when kids are involved, that fear just escalates anymore. So prepare for what to expect, but be willing and able to adapt to what happens. And remember those critical relationships that we have within the public health world. It really helps. So I'm out of time, so thank you, everyone.